So my name is Scott Budden. I'm a partner and founder of Orchard Point Oyster Company. I've been sustainably farming oysters on the eastern shore of Maryland since 2015. So I figured before I dive into my individual story, I wanted to kind of back up a little bit and frame kind of how we got here collectively, and then go into why am I here today, and then what does it all mean, and where are we going from here. So if you look behind us here, we obviously have this great body of water, the Inner Harbor, that flows downstream to the Patapsco and eventually into the Chesapeake Bay, right? I think anybody that drove here using Apple Maps or Google Maps kind of knows the lay of the land, or you're from here, obviously know that. So back in the antebellum years, so after the Civil War, Maryland was the largest exporter and producer of oysters in the world. So think about that. We were producing and harvesting millions and millions of bushels from these very waters that you see behind us, right? So the waterfront, I want you to envision it, because this is part of redesigning industry. It was filled with packing houses, seafood distributors, and right after the Civil War came in Bethlehem Steel, Domino Sugar, all these other large industries. So it was existing kind of in the background. Oysters used to be a poor man's food, right? You look around here and you see these whimsical advertising logos for oyster products that were actually in cans, if you think about it. And they went on railroad cars all across the country, all across the world. So it's actually one of the reasons why Baltimore has the sewer system it has, right? One of the easiest and cheapest solutions to the sewer system, as he talked about earlier, besides the privy, was just dump the crap, pardon my French, dump the crap out in the bay. But they decided not to do that. Why? Because there was a very vocal lobby from the oyster industry. It was, people were making money hand over fist, right? So that wasn't a very viable solution if people didn't want to get sick and wanted to have a viable industry. So fast forward to now, right? Modern day, the oyster population of the Chesapeake Bay is estimated to be up around 1 to 2% of that historic level. So we've gone from the very top of oyster production globally to pretty much almost the bottom. And it's kind of a sad story of tragedy to commons. There's a lot of reasons, I won't go into it, but we can kind of get to where it's going at the very end. So why am I here today with you guys? Well, first of all, I'm very honored to be recognized amongst the other 12 awardees, very deserving folks. Let's have a round of applause for all those people that were here before. I, similar to the last story, was not an oyster farmer by trade from the very beginning. I grew up on the Eastern Shore. I grew up on the water, very fortunate. Grew up on a farm. So you had two things right there, right? First of all, I love the water. I love to learn how the ecology of the bay worked. And I also understood that without farms, you know, we don't eat, right? So I was fascinated by that. But I didn't do anything in a commercial sense on the water. I crabbed recreationally, fished recreationally, and actually I spent a week in the Inner Harbor on a Coast Guard cutter doing environmental education in middle school. It was a great opportunity. I actually, you know, spent one of my first times on a sailboat here, you know, sailing around one of these boats that we saw earlier sailing around. So I have a deep connection to the harbor from the very beginning, in addition to being from the Eastern Shore. So after college, which I was not studying biology or anything related to, you know, agriculture or anything like that. I was an econ, international relations double major. So about the farthest thing you could pitch, far afield. I ended up going to work as a business analyst in D.C. for about 10 years. I worked for a media company, and then I was at a global consulting firm. And again, liked the lifestyle, enjoyed, you know, the work to a degree, but I didn't feel connected. I didn't feel a purpose. And so that led me back to the Eastern Shore, to my roots, to try something completely crazy. And everybody said, you're crazy, right? I think I quit my job 3 months before I was fully vested at the last company. But when I put my first crop of oysters in the water in 2015, I realized that this was going to be a full-time thing, and it would be just negligent to ignore all these hundreds of thousands of oysters that I just put in the water. So it was a struggle from the very start. I mean, oyster farming, you know, it sounds romantic. People are like, oh, you're an oyster farmer. That sounds amazing. Like, tell me more about it. It's like, well, really it boils down to manual labor and throwing rocks around on an unsteady platform all day and all weather conditions. So, yeah, there's a bit of romanticism when you're out there and you're seeing nature that other people don't get to see, and you're out in solitude and all that. But it's a lot of hard work. And going into it, I kind of dipped my toe. I was working from home way before that was a thing. Maybe a decade before, and I would work from, you know, the whole day on building my boat and getting the gear all ready for the when I finally got permission from the state to farm the oysters. And then I would come in, eat dinner, and then I would do my consulting work from like 7 to midnight, send off all my deliverables, get up and do it again. And I did that, It took 4.5 years, believe it or not, to get the permission to actually start the first farm. Our first farm was in the Chester River. So in 2015, put the oysters in the water. Well, you know, for 18 months, you don't get any return. You're just working the farm, getting those oysters from, you know, size of a grain of sand all the way up to something you can sell. So what did I do then? So, you know, spent 3 days a week working the farm, you know, 7 to 7 usually those days, and then I'd spend 3 days a week actually making a little bit of money as a landscaper, and then on my 7th day, I'd go to a marina, and I'd, like, varnish teak or do something, work on sailboats. So it was like a grind. It was a grind for, like, a year and a half, right? So I think we sold our first oyster in 2016, the fall of, and since then, we've been able to scale and expand despite a lot of, you know, conditions outside of our control, and now we sell, I think last year, we sold 950,000 oysters off the farm. We sell all over the country. You know, we sell to... Now that the waterfront looks different, it's not oyster packing houses and, you know, industry as much. We sell to, you know, restaurants right across the way on a weekly basis. I'll be back here tomorrow actually delivering some of our farm-raised oysters to these restaurants. It's kind of funny. So we've come a long way. We've managed to survive, you know, external events completely out of our control. Most rain in recorded history in 2018, if you guys remember being in the region, it just rained like every freaking day, it seemed like. And then, you know, so we stock up on all of our inventory. We're gonna go hard. We're never gonna run short on supply again, because all that fresh water wasn't good for the crop. And then bam, run smack into the middle of a global pandemic in 2020 with millions, literally millions, 10 million oysters I think we put in the farm in 2 years with no home. Our sales went to zero in 2 weeks. So we had to figure out a way, because we were selling oysters all over the country at the time. So we had to figure out a way to survive. So we went 100% to retail. We figured out how to do cold shipping, start shipping as far west as, you know, Washington State, all over the country within 2 weeks. We figured this thing out. That got us through, thank goodness. Thanks to everybody's kind support in the public. And here we are. We've managed to persevere. So that's kind of, you know, my personal story of my journey from, you know, not an oyster farmer to oyster farming. You know, I couldn't have done it without our amazing team of guys. We've got, I think, 4 really good, hardworking farmhands now, and I have 2 other working partners that have been key to our success. So I couldn't have done it without them. It's definitely a team sport. Where does that leave us now? What does this mean for going forward as far as an industry in the state? So the way we farm has only been around in its current form since 2010. So put that in context, right? We had 1860 and before, even since colonial times, raising oysters a certain way, or really just going out and harvesting them from the wild commons. Now in 2010, the state allows us to do it in a different way, which is to put the oysters in a controlled environment, actually raise them with higher quality and more control, right? So where are we now? Well, if you look at the numbers, the wild harvest in the last 3 years has really taken off. We're starting to see this resurgence, right? It's gone from 500 plus thousand bushels last year to over 600,000 bushels this past season, which, again, it's not millions of bushels coming out of the bay like it once was, but we're starting to see some recovery there. And there's a lot of overlap between what we do as farmers and the wild fishery, and I think overall it means that, you know, water quality is starting to trend in the right direction. The sanctuaries are working, the rehabilitation of public fisheries is working, and aquaculture is working. It's growing very steadily. We're having a very slow and steady trajectory. There's a lot of reasons why it's not just taking off, and I won't get into that today, but I think it speaks to the fact that things are starting to look a little bit better environmentally, which is kind of a nice bit of news in this day and age. It's not all doom and gloom. So I want to thank everybody for listening to that story, and enjoy the rest of your evening.